Audio courtesy of ESPN. Good morning, everybody. Anthony Lima is out. Daryl Ryder is in. The Cavaliers have made picks. Hi, Daryl.
Morning, Ken. I didn't even realize there was a draft last night until about 8 o'clock.
No, you didn't. You're a sportsman. You know about this stuff. You knew about the draft. They didn't have a pick the night before, so you had to be looking forward to tonight. Yeah. In some regard, Tyrese Proctor. I did this the night of the one draft where they took Deion Waiters, and I kept wanting to call him Deion Wagner. I keep wanting to call Tyrese Proctor Tyrese Maxey, and I don't know why. It's not even close. Tyrese Proctor's a guy I've actually heard of.
That's all right. I called Dylan Gabriel Taylor Gabriel occasionally.
Yes. That happens. You're going to have that. But at least it's like the same kind of close name and everything like that.
At least he didn't get trapped underneath the giant parka. Taylor Gabriel at the jersey reveal.
Oh, that's right.
Could not get out of the giant parka.
I was like, is he confused with Prada Wheat? I go, no. He couldn't get out of the
giant
parka.
There's been a lot of Cleveland Browns trapped under a lot of different cloth.
Yeah. Good point.
And quarterbacks under defensive linemen.
I've never heard of Saliu Niang, so I'm not going to pretend I have. That's what Mike DeCourcy's for from the Sporting News at 8:20. I want to ask him about some of the things that are going on with the NBA draft and the Cavs who got two picks last night, because it seems that Tyrese Proctor will be on this roster, as you heard in the open. We'll probably be able to help out. Mike Ganzi actually spoke about that. He is the general manager of your Cleveland Cavaliers. I know we always say Kobe Altman. Kobe Altman's a team president. Mike Ganzi is the general manager. He spoke yesterday, and this is what he said about Tyrese Proctor, who the Cavaliers took with their first pick in the second round.
You know, he can really shoot. You know, this year was a career high, 40%. You can't have enough ball handlers. You know, obviously he can play on and off the ball, which is attractive. You can run him off screens. He can play pick and roll. You know, he can get in the paint. He's got a good mid-range game. He makes plays for others. And he's 6'5", you know, and he's 21, too.
Mike Ganzi, local guy, so you better be careful about what you're saying about him there, Daryl. he also did go on and was asked, and this is a good question, I think, does Proctor change at all how the Cavs will approach Ty Jerome and Sam Merrill?
I don't think it changes it much at all. You know, I think with this pick, we were just going to take the best talent there and then the guy we like the most. And, you know, Tyrese was that guy and can't have enough ball handlers. And he's 21. He's still got a lot of upside. We're excited for him to, you know, work with Kenny and his group and get him in here and just kind of see what happens.
Yeah, there's another interesting little piece of the pie coming up here in just a moment there. But you know, going back to that, you know, they're in a weird spot because these are more developmental players. I know that we got excited about Amani Bates, who, you know, in the G League showed some flashes and definitely needs some more seasoning, but there might be a little bit of a future there with that man. When it comes to Tyrese Proctor, you know, you're in a team that the draft is just not exciting for anybody because you're a team that's based on playoff performance and lack thereof, and how they're going to be able to get over that hump in the future. I think that that's what a lot of people are worried about. So the draft, it doesn't make a whole lot of waves, but a guy like Tyrese Proctor might be able to help out down the line, because you know that has to be one of the questions, is where if you're not going to be able to make a huge trade, and I don't think that they're probably going to be able to, Daryl, you know, the Ty Jerome, Sam Merrill conversation does get brought in, but I mean, you have NBA-ready players on your roster. You have to figure out what you want to do with these guys and what their future is going to be, whether it's with your franchise or not with your franchise during this next month. So they're in an interesting spot right now where they could become even a little bit more top-heavy than they already are.
Well, the challenging thing with Sam Merrill and Ty Jerome are bringing them back, it's not just about what salary you pay them. It's the tax penalty that you have to tack on top of that. You know, Ty Jerome could, you know, let's say you brought him back for $15 million. He could actually cost you $70 million, though. It's 15 in salary, but then you have to pay the penalty on top of that because you're so far over that second apron. So the Cavaliers are in a position right now, Ken, where they have to find value in some of these second round picks, because the reason they haven't had any first round picks and they're not going to have any first round picks for a little while is they traded for Donovan Mitchell. And so you have to understand that. And I think folks do understand that, but the challenge for Ganzi, as well as Kobe Altman, is to find some value somewhere. And look, it's the advantage of having the Cleveland Charge here. You can work with those kids organizationally within your own building. It's a lot easier than having them down in Canton where you're separated from the NBA club. And, you know, maybe Proctor's a kid that they are able to develop with the Charge here in the first half of the season. And maybe the second half of the season, he can help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Or he helps you out, maybe not so much this coming season, Ken, but the following year. So, and of course, Niang, they're going to stash over in Europe. And, you know, you never know. A year or two or three down the line, maybe he can help your roster out. So last night was all about just trying to find some value help to round out the very back end of this roster.
You mentioned the tax penalty as well. I think that this needs to be brought in. Because it's a question. I don't know if it's a theory yet. There was a story that came out. Sportico had a story that came out yesterday that Dan Gilbert is exploring selling 15% of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he has retained Allen & Company, I believe, which is a bank, to start to explore who could be a buyer of 15% of the organization, which is a considerable amount when you consider that there's two different valuations. One, in the Sportico story itself, has the team valued at just under $4 billion. CNBC in February of this year ranked the Cavs at $4.35 billion. So a 15% stake... I do Steiner math. I don't do the other math, the actual math. It says it's approximately $652 million. Now, I think I would have a question on this, and I wouldn't have an answer because I have to figure out where they want to go with it. Is it like what the Guardians did when they brought in John Sherman, right?
David Blitzer.
No. Beforehand in 2015-16, that was John Sherman before he bought the Royals. Yeah. Sorry. Because he was the one who kind of helped out with, hey, we're going to take this thing to the next level and we're going to go quote unquote all in and get some of these players here. Is that an investment that helps alleviate the tax penalty of what they have? Because you're seeing this around the league is where you notice like, okay, this is... Go with me on this because this is going to be a little bit difficult. You're seeing guys run the arenas. And because of the second apron, because of the exorbitant tax penalties that they have to pay, which is even more than the old days, they're looking for ways to fill dates. They're looking for ways to alleviate any tax penalty they can so they can be one of the very competitive teams so they can keep drawing money and making money, but they obviously don't want to pay the tax penalty. So that's one of the reasons a lot of people say why the Golden State Valkyries exist over in Golden State. You got this brand new opulent arena. You want to fill dates. Dates are dates. They got a WNBA franchise. You look over here. Dan Gilbert's a pretty good businessman.
He's got the Monsters.
Yes, his family's pretty good businessmen, good business people. He's got the Monsters already, which help fill a lot of dates. You have summer there. Well, can we get the Cleveland Rockers going again? And obviously that's been heavily rumored and not a done deal, but it looks like it could be very well coming to fruition at some point soon here. So when you take on another buyer, when you take on another person who has a percentage, you know, I'm wondering, does it help alleviate a tax penalty? Because you want to remain a competitive team, but you also do not want to operate into the red. I know he's worth, what, $32 billion or whatever the hell it is. I mean, it's an incredible amount of money.
Right.
But you're still going to try to operate as a business as best you can.
Well, he paid just shy of $400 million for the franchise, and he's going to get...
Just over $375 million, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, yeah, just short.
So,
boy, it's a long time. 20 years. He's on the Cavs for 20 years.
Absolutely. And based on a $4 billion valuation of the franchise, he's looking at $600 million mm-hmm. that he's going to get for that 15%. That's certainly a way to raise significant cash in rather rapid fashion. I've even said the Haslams should consider selling 10% of the Browns that they would be allowed to do under the new NFL ownership guidelines. So they could raise a quick $500 million to, you know, put toward the, whether it's the stadium or whatever they need. So this is a quick way that Dan Gilbert can, to your point, Ken, raise some liquidity with the franchise. It'll certainly help with the tax. Dan has never been shy about spending money. The year they won the NBA championship, I don't know if folks remember this, but organizationally, the Cavaliers actually lost money that year. They won the NBA title and they lost tens of millions of dollars.
Well, that's the way it was. You know, it seemed to be that was the way in the 90s and early 2000s, right? Where if you really wanted to win, you had to lose money for the year.
Well, the Jacobs family, when they owned the Indians back in the 90s, and I remember when those teams' payrolls were approaching $90 to $100 million, they were right there with the New York Yankees, but they were still turning a profit because the building was sold out every night.
Yeah.
Merchandising was off the chain, and Jacobs always had his profit margin that was built in. Hey, we have to clear this much money each and every year for this to continue to work. And then the Dolans, when they bought the team from Jacobs, you know, they tried to operate it like fans. Hey, let's go sign Juan Gonzalez for $10 million. Let's sign this guy for another $8 million. And then they realized real fast, yeah, we can't spend money like that. All of a sudden, we have to run this thing like a business. So Dan Gilbert's got the financial backing to be able to absorb the tax hits. And he, as long as he's able to compete for championships, he'll spend whatever it takes. But certainly selling 15% of the team, that's a quick way to raise about $600 million.
No, it'll certainly help out. And again, if this is the new CBA, and it looks like this is going to be the new CBA for a while here, is you want to find a way to be a competitive team, a really competitive team, but to be part of that, like you are a top-heavy organization. Because we said, like, hey, if you really wanted to trade for Jaylen Brown and you wanted to get nuts, you could get nuts, but I was talking to Justin Rowan of the Chase down, and he's like, well, you can play with eight guys because that's basically what your yeah. what your salary is. So if you have an eight-man rotation and your roster is just eight people, then you could possibly get it done. Or you could add on investors, and it's harder and harder to do so because the teams are worth more and more and more and more and more, and we only have so many billionaires out there that can afford to buy in for 15% because – I think there's got to be some billionaires out there going, why do I want to settle for 15 when I can get 51 from somewhere else? I think that's a conversation that is down the line. But go ahead.
When the Haslams bought into the Milwaukee Bucks, they bought 25%.
Yes.
And for that 25%, they got 100% of the Cleveland Browns. Like they almost paid, it was about $100 million shy. It was $800+ million they paid for that 25% of the Bucks. Meanwhile, they paid just shy of $1 billion for 100% of the Browns. That just right there, Ken, explains, to your point, how fast the valuations of these franchises has just absolutely exploded in recent years.
There's another big part of this, though, that is very interesting here. Mike Yanzi, you know, it seemed there were a lot of people that seemed to be, you always want some action. Whether it's good or not, whether it's prudent or not, you always want a little bit of action. Well, it's easier said than done. He actually said he was asked whether or not the Cavaliers, this is General Manager Mike Yanzi, whether or not the Cavaliers looked into moving back into the first round.
Well, that first round, we're always active. I mean, you guys know Kobe very well, you know, so we're always in the mix for everything. You know, we're going to make those calls and we want to know what's going on, because if there's an opportunity to strike, you know, we want to do it and be aggressive, and, you know, nothing obviously transpired.
You shouldn't be surprised. I don't think anybody's surprised. I'm in a spot now. And this is where Mike DeCourcy comes in at 8:20. We're very well versed in the NFL draft, all of us here in Cleveland. And the NFL draft is the biggest draft of all the drafts combined. But in the NBA, I'm going, well, are there guys worthy of moving up into the first round for? It's like, well, hey, you don't know that. You don't know that. I mean, but a lot of people just heard of Ace Bailey last week and a half over the stuff that was going on. There's a couple of names that pop out just because you watch SportsCenter throughout the year, or I leave on, honestly, some of the names I figure out just because John Fanta does the play-by-play over at Fox Sports, and he does a lot of Big East basketball games, and so I will, as a buddy of John and a fan of John, I turn John on, and he's doing Providence Friar basketball, and then he'll out-of-conference Rutgers basketball, so you learn about those guys, but that's about it. So I don't know exactly what's worth moving up into the first round this year, because I got to tell you, the level of watching college basketball has dropped off considerably here, where it was like, okay, they know who Cooper Flagg is, but who the hell is everybody else? Yeah. And again, I knew who Tyrese Proctor was just because he was Cooper Flagg's teammate. Just because he played for one of the biggest brands in college basketball. But if he went to, frankly, if he went to Maryland even, if he went to a lot of other places, I'd be doing a lot of making up for it right now. Because, hell, we were looking into whether or not they were going to take Cam Jones or Bryce Williams, the one kid out of Nebraska and Cam Jones, a kid out of Marquette, if they were going to do that. But yeah, I think that this is he's a guy who could possibly help. There's not much that they can do. And it's still, hey, what are you going to do, be able to do with your core four on this?